Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As we've been discussing on the show today, it's the first day of the DNC, and it's an unprecedented one, with events being all virtual on account of the pandemic. There was another Democratic convention that would become unprecedented based on what happened there in Chicago in August 1968. LBJ had announced that he would not be seeking re-election that year, and Democratic delegates gathered at the city's International Amphitheater to select his potential successor. It was a year marked by protests across the country over the war in Vietnam, protests and rioting in dozens of cities after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and Robert Kennedy. Those tensions came to a head at the 1968 convention. The mayor of Chicago at the time, Richard Daley, cracked down on protesters, calling on thousands of police for law and order.
Mr. Chairman, most delegates to this convention do not know that thousands of young people are being beaten in the streets of Chicago. And for that reason, and that reason alone, I request the suspension of the rules for the purpose of adjournment for 2 weeks at 6 p.m. to relocate the convention in another city of the choosing of the Democratic National Committee.
And with George McGovern as President of the United States, we wouldn't have to have Gestapo tactics in the streets of Chicago.
Gentlemen, get the thing straight once and for all. The policeman isn't there to create disorder. The policeman is there to preserve disorder.
Voices from 1968, the last one there belonging to Mayor Daley, speaking to reporters in what's become known as a Kinsley gaffe, right? That's where a politician accidentally tells the truth. We're joined now by two people who were in Chicago in 1968. Abe Peck is a professor emeritus in the Journalism School at Northwestern University. And in 1968, he was involved in an underground newspaper called the Chicago Seed. He was also a yippie counterculturalist who negotiated permits with the city. Abe, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
Also joining us is Mary Kay Schleider. She's a professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin Parkside. In 1968, though, she was living in Rogers Park, Illinois, and was entering her sophomore year at Loyola that August. Mary Kay, welcome to the 21st to you.
Thank you.
And also thanks for being here. And also joining us is Gus Wood. He has a doctorate in history and is a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Illinois School of Labor and Employment Relations. He also served as co-president of the Graduate Employee Organization on campus, where he helped lead a strike 2 years ago over the graduate student employee contracts, which was the longest in the school's history. Gus, welcome to the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, I want to know, do you have memories of 1968? Do you see parallels between 1968 and 2020? Or is this something that's different and should be treated separately? Join the conversation at 800-222-9455. The number again is 800-222-9455. Abe, I want to begin with you. You were working in underground media in Chicago at the time. You were also helping the yippie protesters negotiate permits with the city. First, for our younger listeners, can you explain who were the yippies?
Yippies were a countercultural organization that believes in kind of the action of the deed. It arose parallel to an organization called the Diggers in San Francisco. It was based on the idea was that politics, straight politics, were quite boring. It didn't fit the times. And that, as Abby Hoffman, one of the yippie non-leaders, as they were called, said, a yippie is a hippie who's been hit over the head by a cop.
So, and I think I saw online the flag was, like a red star with a marijuana leaf?
That was a little later, but yeah,
it was that later. Okay.
Marijuana leaf. So that was post-convention, and the convention represented a big shift in the politics of the time.
So what was the atmosphere in Chicago leading up to the 1968 convention?
Well, tenser and tenser, of course. I mean, the seminal event really was before, which was the murder of Martin Luther King. The West Side burned, South Side had its moments, and it set a tone for the city, I think, in retrospect, the city fathers, if you will. that they could, you know, they were really fearful of this. At the time, we were told that the gang intelligence unit was going around to the very large black gangs and saying, good time for a summer vacation in August, because they're really deathly afraid of a either a black rising, there was Lord knows enough to rise about, or a rerun, revenge, whatever you want to call it. So that was tension number one. Tension number two was the Yippies were built on media hype. So if we said 5,000 people were coming one week, we had to say 10,000 people were coming the other week, and we made some pretty outrageous claims. I think the only problem with those claims, I think the city believes some of them. So the negotiations were very, very tense. I met with one of the high-ranking cops in a meeting at City Hall, and he said, I will clear Lincoln Park of 10,000 people if I see one marijuana cigarette. And if there was ever a guarantee I could make in the summer of 1968, that would have been it. So it was increasingly tense. There was a street kid who was killed on Wells Street the week of the convention, just before. They showed us an array of sites. I remember going to Soldier Field, which they posited as an alternative place. We wanted to stay in Lincoln Park. We wanted to stay there for the duration of the convention. Other people wanted to organize around Grant Park. We went down to on the field at Soldier Field, and I was with a guy who was an ultra freak, and he looked around and he said, Lions and Christians, that we would be penned up in there. So it was increasingly tense. There were no permits. There were no signs. The deputy mayor we negotiated with had the Kismet name, Mayor Deputy Mayor Stahl, which was a great name, S-T-A-H-L. So it just kind of ratchet. We knew something was going to happen to the point where actually I broke a bit with the other organizers in that I felt we had to at least warn people that there was going to be something here. It wasn't just going to be fairies, bears, and rock and roll. And I wrote something saying, if you come into Chicago, be sure to wear some armor in your hair.
All right. So, Gus, as someone who studied history, we heard some of the things that were happening in Chicago that summer. But can you talk a little bit about the broader social context, some of the other historical events that contributed to the protests converging on Chicago in 1968?
Sure. I think one of the biggest things that we have to remember at this point is that there was a challenge in the question of American liberalism, that there was this idea amongst the working classes and especially amongst these youth who had this intellectual rigor and this theoretical, the strength of theoretical practice, that the system in its current form, particularly after the civil rights movement had gave way to the Black Power movement, that there was something outside the system that we needed to work towards a new moment. You had Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture now, and in terms of shouting out Black Power, you also had a lot of the early onset of the deindustrialization and the movement of Black bodies out of their neighborhoods. You know, the ghetto, the proletarianization and ghettoization had started to wind down as capital was shifting its political economy in the United States at the time. And of course, Black bodies and Black spaces were at the forefront of a lot of these issues. So a lot of these working class African-Americans and a lot of these students at the time were saying that we just had this civil rights bill, you just had this voting rights bill, but the material conditions aren't necessarily changing. So although you had the Great Society program, a lot of the attention and funding and focus shifted to Vietnam. And so you put two and two together, you had this culmination of that, the fact that the Vietnam War is taking away from the focus on improving the lives of working class people, predominantly African Americans, after the Civil Rights Bill did not do everything that the working classes wanted. There was a lot of anger and distrust of the system at the time. And so that's why the DNC served as a pivotal moment to show the protests of not only the convention itself, but of the system that continues to create problems and crises amongst oppressed peoples. And so that's really a lot of what was going on here. And it was also an acknowledgement of the international problems of U.S. capital and empire building as well. And that's why the Black Power movement and the student movements coalesced in understanding the international crisis of working class solidarity. And so all of these things combined led to people saying something had to change. And the DNC became this watershed moment that afterwards, you're going to have a lot more protests and a lot more movement action directed towards the material conditions of people both here and abroad.
If you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the Democratic National Convention in Chicago in 1968 with Gus Wood, who we just heard speaking there, Abe Peck, and Mary Kay Schleider, who's an associate professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, but was a student at Loyola in 1968. Mary Kay, you were 19 at the time, as I understand it, living in Rogers Park. What did you think of the atmosphere leading up to the convention and the messages from the mayor and protesters?
Well, of course, there was, we were still feeling the aftermath of the killing of Martin Luther King. And there was this feeling that I think a feeling of optimism in that we saw that there was a lot of injustice, but we felt a lot of trust that our generation was going to fix it. And so leading up to the convention, we were going to go in there and tell everyone our message of the need for change, and especially the focus at that point was against the Vietnam War.
You, as I understand it, you went to Grant Park during the day after some of the tensions between police and protesters that were happening at the convention
right.
at night. Can you describe what do you remember seeing there?
Well, there was it seemed like a strong community, and people were there were a lot of people walking around with injuries from the night before from the at the hands of police, and but there was a lot of closeness and in a sense people were taking showers and baths and Buckingham Fountain and walking around, and just everyone was very friendly and but discussing the issues. But there was a feeling of trust and feeling that this was something that we could work with.
Mm-hmm.
There was certainly a mistrust of police at that point. And I think that really surprised me, because I hadn't recognized that aspect of our society at the time. And of course, the people in the police mistrusted the young people and thought of us as gangsters coming to tear up the city. So there was a big gap that way.
Yeah. Abe, how about that? Can you talk about when
did tensions sort of bubble over
outside the convention, right, between police and protesters?
Yeah, well, the police, I mean, part of it was class, you know. There were working class kids demonstrating too. But for the police, I remember when we were driven out of Lincoln Park, the chants were, from the police, the chants were commie and the six-legged word, derogatory word that begins with an F for gay people. And I think that, you know, they had, war was mentioned, of course, which was seminal to everything. And they might have had cousins and brothers and sons in the war. Whereas I had been in and out of the Army quickly, but most people had done their best to get out of the draft. And so I think there really was and of course we were challenging order, as your great Mayor Daley quote said. So I think, you know, we were kind of a pre-Occupy movement in a way. We wanted the park to demonstrate our counterculture. If the city had been smarter, they would have let us do it in Lincoln Park. And now you have movements like, whether it's Occupy Wall Street or Occupy Portland, where people are trying to carve out spaces. And, you know, Portland is a much different discussion, I think. But that was one goal we wanted, and the police were called in to get us out of there, and they did with quite a bit of zeal. The next to last night of the convention, we were in our office, and our windows shattered, and I ran out as a holy fool. I ran out into the street, and the only car on the street going slowly north on the South Street was a police car. So they shot out our windows there were a fair number of undercover cops in Grant Park, especially. And some of them were provocateurs. I'm not saying every last bit of violence was from the cops, but they were stirring the pot too. So it was very antagonistic in a way. I mean, there were young cops who were a little more sympathetic, but they were there, you know, at the orders of the mayor. And I think we have to remember also the law and order constituency. Most people took Daley's side during the convention, which was a kind of crusher to us in a way. You know, we were challenging, you know, Joe Sixpack's way of life too. And then those people liked the order too. So when the response came in, it kind of favored Daley, which was, you know, interesting.
Gus, we have to take a break in a couple of minutes. But before that, you know, we have heard this idea that the year we're living through now, 2020, is kind of like 1918 flu pandemic, 1929 Great Depression, and 1968 massive social unrest, all rolled into one. And I'm wondering, as somebody who's not only studied history but involved in activism, do you see those parallels?
Very much so. And you know, it's always the saying goes is that whenever there's a recession or any type of economic contraction, that the people on the bottom rungs of the U.S. political economy are already in a Great Depression. So we've had a few on those ends anyway, but you can look at where we're heading and the forecast that this more than likely will look like a second Great Depression. And you also have the issues of the law and order discourse from the American ruling class structure coming out and saying that, yeah, no matter what's happening now, we're going to have law and order and you're going to obey us. And I think that what you're seeing, what we're all seeing and experiencing now as we're trying to organize and trying to actually push for a power shift in the dynamics of how the police operate, a dynamics in the shift of how housing operates, especially in relation to how COVID has ravaged a lot of poor working class spaces. This is literally going to be one of the biggest challenges since 1968.
We need to pause on that thought there and take a quick break. I'd like to ask all of you to stick around. We'll wrap up this conversation after the break. And we're also going to be talking to a couple of people about reaction to Kamala Harris's nomination as Joe Biden's running mate for vice president. This is the 21st. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, 1968. Just a couple of minutes left in this conversation. We're talking with Gus Wood, who's with the School of Labor and Employment Relations at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, Abe Peck, Emeritus Professor of Journalism at Northwestern, and Mary Kay Schleider, who's an Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside and was a student at Loyola in 1968. Mary, I'm wondering, do you... you know, having lived through 1968, watching the news this year, do you see those parallels? Do you feel those parallels?
Yes, definitely. But I see the protest as much broader than in 1968. It seemed that there was a smaller group, a generational group, and predominantly students, and from my perspective, and today it seems to have, it's multi-generational, it's all over the country, and there's a lot of, but some of the same feelings of the need for change, and maybe we're a little less naive than we were then, maybe we better understand the complexity of the issues now than we did then.
Yeah. Gus, do you think there would be protests at the 2020 DNC if it was not being held virtually this year?
Oh, very much so. And I think that's kind of when you see what Mayor Lightfoot has been putting out and how the police force has been acting in Chicago and also other federal agencies, is that if there was any type of meeting of the sort, that they were already planned and tactically prepared, because, yeah, that was going to be a site of intense protests easily.
Yeah. And Abe, last question to you. I wonder, as somebody who was involved in underground media at the 1968 convention, there is not going to be a lot of media access this year. Certainly there's no convention floor or even people outside a convention hall. How are you feeling about that?
Well, that won't stop everyone on the planet from commenting about it. And there's been a big change in media. You had the big three media networks and four papers and four mainstream papers in Chicago reporting. Now you have 300 million Twitter people reporting. And so it's going to be a very different media frame. Also, I wanted to say that, you know, in terms of the leadership of around 68 protests, those particular protests of the convention, it was fairly young and it was very white and it was very male. And I think one of the healthy things now is that this movement is much more diverse. I know it's not quite what you asked, but I think the media coverage is just going to be, it'll be more diffuse. But that, you know, and there'll be a lot of noise, but within that, there may be a lot of sagacity that wouldn't exist in the official framework.
No, that's a great answer. And noting the diversity of the, I guess, democratization of the protest planning in 2020 is a good place to end this conversation. Abe Peck is professor emeritus at Northwestern and was a writer for the underground newspaper, the Chicago Seed, in 1968. We've also been speaking with Mary Kay Schleider, a professor of sociology at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, Loyola student in 1968, and Gus Wood, postdoctoral research fellow at the U of I School of Labor and Employment Relations. Thank you all so much for sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st.
Thank you. Hope you get to do your show live in person at some point.
Me too.
You never have, right?